Season 4, Episode 4, Where's Swaldo? Random note, but when the episode opened, because NYPD Blue has random music when it first starts, usually. Sometimes it's like more hip-hop based. This one kind of seemed like it had an island flavor. Like we were, I was like, oh, are we going to the tiki room? Like, it got really weird. Like,
yeah, I know what you're talking about, where they, where the beginning's like a little mixed up, kind of giving you a little flavor for the episode.
And this one was like very of the islands. And they get to what looks like an accident, and the uniform cop is running down what happened. And he says, it's most likely a drive-by. We found a 9mm and a half gram of coke. Simone says, what did you do, weigh it? And Sipowicz kind of tells him, hey, your job's supposed to secure the crime scene. You're not supposed to start looking through people's pockets. Kind of telling the dude to, like, get his shit together. If he wants to stay on the job. Then they go up to the car, and it looks like one of the victims is Brother Quasi.
Yeah, Andy's friend.
And if you, I think, because Hulu doesn't do the previously on NYPD Blues, it would remind you that Quasi is the gentleman that Sipowicz had his N-word fiasco with.
Oh, that is true. They don't do the previously on NYPD Blue. You just brought that up, and I noticed that.
When I was talking to Ben about binging the show, I asked him, I was like, so you don't even know what the previously on NYPD Blues are then? And he goes, no. Yeah. And that's kind of like how people who watch The Office on Netflix now, you can skip the theme song.
Which is great. Which is the greatest invention ever by Netflix.
Because that was something that people who used to watch The Office on repeat, like, they would have to listen to that song until it was buried into their skull. And people who watch NYPD Blue, you're so used to previously on NYPD Blue. So it's like...
Well, it's also crazy if you watch The Office, I think it's like the second to last season.
Mm-hmm.
Or the last season. They don't even have an intro anymore.
Don't they just do like the... Doo-doo-doo-dun, and then it cuts
And then it cuts after Andy drops his...
Big red.
After Andy drops his little thing off the desk. It's not really long at all. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, they probably needed more time for all the great humor once Michael left. Well, they look at the car. It has drugs and guns in it, and Sipowicz makes a great comment, says, oh, this is Brother Quasi. He's an upstanding member of the community, or else this would look drug-related. And there's a note there's a note on the dashboard that says Aisha at 10:30. Sipowicz then makes another comment, and he's like, what is that, some kind of tribal name? And Simone says, it's a woman's name, and he says, Susan is a woman's name.
So racist.
Pretty much. They head to where Aisha is, and there's a little girl on the steps.
Well, doesn't he think it's a prostitute?
I don't know. I don't remember him saying anything like that. But I know that they're like, okay, well, we're gonna have to figure out who this Aisha is. And when they pull up and it's that little girl, Simone says, I really hope this isn't Aisha. It's a little girl who's super respectful to the police, given who her father is, because he's very critical of the police from the earlier episodes that he was in.
But he's not stupid. He probably tells his daughter, like, you still have to respect them because they could, like, still hurt you, you know?
Yeah. And that little girl is played by Journey Smollett-Bell, who... She has a face that you've seen in a couple things, but the thing I remember her from is she's one of the girls from Jack, the Robin Williams...
Yeah.
Little boy and a grown man movie. They dance around the fact that her father is dead, and then they use the phone inside her apartment, which she offers very respectfully, like I said. And then we cut to the theme song, and this is NYPD Blue Balls, where the Asher Brothers go through every episode of NYPD Blue, and this is the theme song to NYPD Blue.
Hey, is this the theme song?
It is the theme song. It's playing over us talking right now. Anyway, they cut back to Fancy's office where they're running down what happened. It's established that there were three guys in each car. They're going over the specifics that there probably was a guy who... There was a guy who ran out of Quasi's car. And there's a look between Diane and Bobby, because just remember, kids, they're on the rocks currently in their relationship.
Yeah, because she won't shit or get off the pot, you know what I mean?
So they share a look and whatnot. They mention that one of the guy, one of the DOAs is a drug dealer with the street name Prince, and Medavoy lands probably one of the greatest jokes I've ever heard in the show. I guess that means this DOA is the drug dealer formerly known as Prince. Which I was like, I applauded that level of humor, Medavoy. You are the you are the department's dad, and that was the best dad joke ever.
Medavoy's the worst.
Oh, man. James and Greg get a bodega shooting, and Fancy once wanted Diane to work with them on it, but Simone asked for Diane so that he could talk to the little girl, because he thinks she'll be more comfortable talking to them. As they leave to start working on those cases, there's a spat between Fancy and Andy that was really cool, where Andy mentions, oh, it's his former wife, and Fancy says, yeah, they must have split up before I even met him. Andy says, wow, I guess she's got some sense then. And Fancy, I didn't write down exactly what he said, but Fancy comes at him really fast and hard. Oh, he basically says, that's the last time you're going to insult Quasi.
He kind of basically says, don't say anything and don't talk shit until the investigation's over.
And Andy, because Andy talks shit about everybody, so he makes the point, like, no one's going to make him wrong if he isn't. And they go to talk to his ex-wife, and the ex-wife makes it clear that she doesn't want Sipowitz talking to her daughter.
Yeah, she knows who Andy is, and she knows that he's racist, so she doesn't want him to, like, fuck with his daughter and have his racism, like, be painted all over her and shit.
And what's really interesting was because the way they say it is like, she won't be talking to you. I know who you are. And then when Diane takes the little girl to talk to her privately, Sipwood says, do you want me to excuse myself? And she says, oh no, I've dealt with people like you. I just don't want you to be around my daughter. They try to do some investigative and interrogation tricks on her, kind of. Where they ask certain questions to see, like, oh, do you think drugs were involved? Do you think Quasi was running with some bad people? And she gets on a high horse and kind of comes back at them saying, you can't talk to me like this. He didn't do anything wrong. He was always trying to be the better person. You're not going to trick me into saying otherwise, basically. And the little girl comes out. She's crying. She asks for an apology because she said something really mean to her mother. And then we find out her brother, Jerome, had called Quasi to help him with a situation.
The mom's brother.
Yeah, his ex-wife's brother, Jerome, had an issue that Quasi was going to help him with. And when they ask her about it, she says, my brother, Jerome, I haven't talked to him in 2 days. I can't get a hold of him. Now, a question I had about that scene is, it just seemed weird that they wrote a scene where the woman was like, look, we didn't do anything wrong. Quasi's a great guy. He would never do anything wrong. This is bullshit. You guys are bullshit. A second later, they're like, okay, well, it's your brother who's involved, and it looks pretty bad, and then she kind of has to eat crow in front of them.
Yeah.
Like, it was kind of a weird... It turns out, like, not a big deal in the end game anyway, but just that scene, I was like, well, that's kind of fucked up to have her say that and then be wrong immediately after.
Well, no, I think it's trying to build up to that maybe Quasi isn't as innocent as everyone thinks. And that even his wife may have, or his ex-wife may not have known that he had a troubled past. Because I think it's just trying to set up, like, maybe Quasi wasn't as good of a guy as we thought.
It's one of those episodes where they're, like, really keeping it open as to what happened until the end, when they lay it all out. I'm going to go through the bodega shit really fast, because it's not very interesting, even though it's what
they... Yeah, it's not interesting at all, but okay.
There's a DOA in a bodega, and when they get there, there's a guy who is a juice head, who's into cough syrup, and that guy is also a famous face. The guy who plays Lonnie is Clement Blake, who is the homeless drunk from Superbad.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think he's been in a couple Judd Apatow movies as a homeless and or drunk person. He seems to have found his role.
His niche or whatever.
He's good at playing a drunk.
I mean, he looks like a crazy drunk guy.
It, also, with high definition, it's really funny how you notice how they dirtied up his pants. Like,
yeah.
Like, well, they're like, okay, well, he needs to be a drug addict. Okay, well, then get a shirt, just rub brown paint in random areas and rip holes yeah. in the shirt. He basically is saying that a woman named Lisa who does this and makes, like, a fist motion, I guess implying sex.
Or hand jobs.
Or hand jobs. I mean, we're not taking that off the table. And she...
Yeah, one or the other.
He says that she walked in with a couple of guys, and basically they give him drugs for the information on the woman, is what you get out of that scene. They're just asking, well, who is it? What's the deal? And he's like, look, man, I got a cough medicine problem. So, like, we'll give you the money for the script if you just tell us where she is.
Yeah.
Then they, later down the episode, James and Greg pull in Lisa, who is a prostitute, who's just a lovely woman, and which I feel terrible for women that they're like, okay, we need a casting call, we need a crackhead prostitute, so you fit the bill.
Yeah, being an actor or an actress, like, how do you feel about that? You know what I mean? Like, if you like audition for something and they're like, great, you're perfect, you can play our crackhead prostitute.
Also, like, it's weird how the guy, Clement Blake, the woman, Lisa, I looked her up because I didn't recognize her, but hopefully she was in something else, and I didn't see anything of note. But if you're Clement Blake, like, playing the drunk homeless man in a bunch of stuff, for some odd reason, it doesn't seem as bad as the woman who plays a crackhead prostitute. Maybe that's yeah. just inherent sexism, but it's weird how... He comes out like, oh, wow, he's doing a great job. And it's like, oh, geez, they really make her look bad. And it's funny because she keeps saying, like, what I gather happened while she's telling, yeah. well, while she's telling a story about how she banged dudes in the basement and then they killed a dude. she's like, I don't want to give anybody up. I just want to go see my girlfriend. And they're basically, they just straight up say to her face, you're not touching the crack pipe until we get some information. So then she gives him Oswaldo, the owner of the bodega, and then she proceeds to just leave and probably do crack.
Get high, yeah.
The Swaldo, or Oswaldo, he says the dude was, the DOA, the guy was shaking him down for protection, but he already pays somebody for protection. So the guys he already pays for protection killed him. But he's not going to admit that who it is or that he set them up to do so. The only reason they get a suspect in this case is because somebody calls in and says somebody at their bar is bragging about killing somebody in a bodega. It's a yeah. Colombian place.
Well, they seem to get a lot of those just, like, calls from a bar that someone... Because I've been rewatching some of the earlier episodes,
mm-hmm.
and there was a scene where, like, they got a call from a bar about a murder, and then there was another one where they got a call from a bar about a murder, and it was just like, Jesus, is this all cop work is? You get calls from people at a bar overhearing crimes?
Well, they have to, I have to imagine, because I don't know if it was this episode or the next one, the story by was by Bill Clark, who was a detective and the NYPD, uh-huh. but I think they do get a fair amount of, we got a tip that it's probably this guy, and I think it's just helpful with, writing a TV show where you need to continue the story, and you want to make a dead end, so it's like, oh, what are they going to do next? Oh, they got a tip. So, I mean, it just creates drama in the situation. What was weird is the bartender at that bar, I thought he looked familiar, but I kind of, like, let it go. His name is Javier I'm going to say that wrong. Apologies to my Latin Americans. And you know what? Latin's around the world.
Latin? My Latin Americans.
Well, Latinx folks. It's G-R-A-J-E-D-A, so it's Grajeda?
Uh-huh.
Javier Grajeda. He's in Better Call Saul and NYPD Blue, Breaking Bad. But I don't remember what he was. I just guess that he's on the show and he was important enough to be in both shows. But they pick up the guy and they kind of just... off screen, they interrogate him and he won't give up the second guy. And then Swaldo's lawyer shows up and says, yeah, he's too sick to point anybody out and he's not going to do it.
Yeah, that was weird.
And then James and Greg get all pissed at him, saying, we know he does drugs out of that grocery store because there's nothing to sell. And he's a scumbag for letting this guy walk free. And then there's a moment that I wanted to highlight where Cohen walks into the precinct. He gives a hi to that lawyer. He's kind of like, hey, what's going on? Hey, man, what's up? Basically giving giving them the statement like, oh, yeah, lawyers are scumbags that all know each other. Especially after James straight up screams at him. You can tell him that he's a scumbag. And then he turns around. He's like, oh, hey, what's up, Cohen? Hey, we're going golfing, whatever. And then they kind of shake their heads and walk off pissed. That's the Swaldo of it. We go back to Jerome, who was now named as the reason Quasi was out. So they go to Jerome's apartment with his sister, Quasi's ex-wife, and they go to his place, and his sister talks about, like, oh, he's turned his life around. He got into a jam once when he was younger, but he's been the super of this building. And then as they look around, they hear noises from the closet. They go to take it down, and it's Jerome, and he's in the closet, and he has shit himself. Which I thought was pretty...
shit himself. Yeah. Yeah.
That was a weird, uncool thing.
That was a weird turn. There's some weird shit that happens every now and then in these episodes.
Which, I mean, that must have been... it must have been something that actually happened. And I'll be honest, I have shit my own pants.
Oh my god, what?
I have.
Yeah, when you were like one.
No, I did it in my early 20s because I was sick and I thought it was a fart and it was not. When I did, it didn't like explode my pants in wet grossness. Like,
what
they
are we talking about right now?
Because I'm talking.
Are we literally talking about us shitting our pants?
Yes,
we are. What are we talking about?
But I wanted to point out that this guy, when he shit his pants, it looks like he sat on a chilly water balloon. Like, it was all over his pants. Which I don't...
Maybe it was explosive.
Maybe. I don't think they did their research on pants shitting when they did the makeup on that dude's pants.
I don't think they did their research on pants shitting.
I don't think they did. They get some information on the other DOA after they pulled Jerome out of his apartment and clean him up. And it's that the DOA was running with a drug dealer named Markham, who goes by Fat Cat. They go over Jerome and they say he's pretty clean, he's a regular... and they also mention that he's a regular at church, which is another thing that kind of annoys me about the justice system. They always go like, well, they go to church. And I'm kind of like, that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, some of the most corrupt people are pastors, so...
Like, I don't really understand how they're like, oh, yeah, he's been clean. Because they say he's been clean since he's been 18, he's had a steady job, and he hasn't done anything, and he's a regular at church. And I want to be like, that doesn't mean anything. So then they have to go at Jerome, and they need to ask him what happened. And Jerome is wigging out. He is scared, and he doesn't want to talk. And I really like this interview because I thought he did a great job. Also, he's played by Anthony Lee, who I know I've seen him before. It turns out he was in Liar Liar with Jim Carrey. I think he had a small part in that. But the reason Quasi was with him, and he was in the car, he tells the whole story. He found drugs at his building. He left a note with the cops, and the drugs were gone the next day or two. The drug dealer whose drugs those were comes by and threatens him if he doesn't come up with the money or the drugs. So then he calls Quasi to intervene, and Quasi works out a deal where they go meet him and he says, hey man, here's the deal. He turned in the drugs, which is the right thing to do. You're not going to threaten my friend here for just doing the right thing. The guy explains that he was fronted for the drugs, so now he owes that guy money, so he has to do something about it. And while they're at that meeting, the drive-by happens, and they kill Quasi and that dude, and they didn't notice Jerome, which is why he got away. And the story seems legit, So they have to go forward with the information that they have. Jerome confirms one piece of information that Fat Cat is the guy that fronted the drugs because he mentioned him in the interrogation or interview. After they get done with the interview, they talk about going to pick up Fat Cat. And they tell the ex-wife stays around with her daughter to figure out what happened and to make sure that her brother isn't involved. So they let her know in front of her daughter why her father got killed. And say, basically, yeah, your dad was doing the right thing. There was another weird moment where they were like, do you have anybody to stay with you? And she says something like, I can't remember how she worded it, but it was like, don't think that my mourning or something will be anything like that from my husband. Like, I forgot the wording, but it was very weird and, like, underhanded. Kind of like, don't pretend like you give a shit like my husband would.
Yeah, and like, yeah, it's really weird.
And all they did was say, like, do you have somebody to stay with you? And she's like, yeah, you can go fuck yourselves, kind of. It was weird. It was an odd thing to say. And then she leaves, and they say, well, we're going
to
go...
Well, not really. It's not really an odd thing to say, because this police department has kind of treated her and her family like garbage, so...
I guess that's true. It's
she's kind of like, fuck it, who cares? Like, I don't need them, I don't want them, like, there's no need for them type of situation, which I understand.
They agree they gotta go look for Fat Cat, and they say, oh, there's no reason to do it before midnight. And Sipwood says, yeah, they don't like being out early if they're not murdering. So they swarm this party, which is like a house party that has private security detail. As they walk up, James Martinez says, I'm pretty sure that guy's on the job, to one of the security.
Yeah.
They roll up to the top, and they break up the party, and they're gonna arrest Fat Cat, who is played by Paul Bates, who's kind of a famous face, because he's in Coming to America.
Oh, okay.
He's also in 8 Mile, and he's been in a couple other things, but... When you go to his IMDb, the first picture is of him in Coming to America, and I know that's a really popular movie that I still haven't seen. I've heard only positive things, though. So they get up there, and he seems really nonplussed about being arrested, and it pisses off Sipowicz, and he says, you keep talking like we're chums, Blimpy. We'll give you the secret handshake at the station house.
Such an asshole.
So they arrest him, and they arrest his bodyguards, or his, like, close buddies, and they take him outside. And as they do, Arthur Fancy comes down and just starts dressing down the guy that's on security that works for the police department.
Yeah, well, because he's not supposed to be there.
And he goes super hard on him, and then the guy's like, look, man, they know I do private security. He's like, yeah, where they're serving alcohol illegally to felons. And then he's like, well, I don't go upstairs much. And then Fancy says, no, I'm coming back off duty. So you can pick between an ass whipping or having your CO in my office while IAB takes a statement. And it's kind of like, he goes so hard at him that the second thing that Sipowicz says to him seems so light, where he says, this guy's a caller, so I hope you already got your bribe.
But don't you think Fancy's also upset because, like... He doesn't want, like, another black cop to be, like... He kind of holds other black cops to a higher standard because he wants them to be... He doesn't want them to, like, do that shit, you know? He doesn't want them to work for mob guys or work for gangsters.
Yeah, I can see that.
So he's, like, he's a little bit more... he's a little tougher on hit the black cops than he is white cops to do that shit.
Yeah, there's a whole... Because when we get to the end of this episode, there's a pretty big, weighty bomb that's dropped in the form of the last scene. But there is a statement in this episode, because there are a lot of black actors in this episode. There's Jerome, there's Quasi's ex-wife, there's their daughter, there's Fat Cat and his cronies, there's the cops, because even the uniform cop in the beginning was black. The one that they dress him down because he, like, searched the guys. The two dudes that they interview at the end of the episode as the guys who did the shootings. They're both black. I think the show wanted to make a statement about how all of these characters are very different in terms of intelligence, respect for each other and the law and just the way they act. It's very interesting that they really want, they showed a broad spectrum of different types of people in these African American actors.
No, that's true too.
Because the thing that happens next is they interrogate Fat Cat, who did a really good job because he's in the cage in one of the rooms, and they bring him out and they're like, okay, so you killed that guy. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I was at a boat show with my mother. And then they're like, okay, yeah. And then he like talks about white women at the boat show. And then he mentions how he knows that Prince got shot because he read the newspaper. And then they like they give him a look, and he, because I'm going to use the words he used before we get some social justice warriors on our asses. He said the phrase, oh, Negroes read? Like, just the way he said it, like, at Sipowicz's looks. Like, oh, Negroes read. And it was so good, and he did it so well. I was like, oh, this guy's killing it. This guy's the best. And he said, I saw all those white women, and I just got excited. And Sipowicz says, how could you tell with your belly hanging over your joint? They basically get nowhere with him, so they put him back in the cage. And then Jerome tries to make an ID, but it's not working. It's also important to note that when they started physically threatening Fats, or Fat Cat, Cohen was watching in the two-way mirror room, and he just goes, I'm gonna go get a Coke. When they're doing the ID, Cohen, because he's a dick, when they come out of the ID room, he's like, thanks for wasting my time. I'm gonna go get some sleep. Because the ID wasn't conclusive. There's a really funny scene that I didn't write down because it started to confuse me. Where they were like, well, we gotta flip a shooter. He's like, who do you think's dumber? He's like, I think that guy's dumber. We're gonna convince him. We're gonna use him to convince the other guy that he flipped. And then Sipowicz is like, so wouldn't that make the other guy dumber? And then there's kind of just this pause for laughter and comedy. And then Simone pulls a really good move where he pretends to be working for Fat Cat and's like, look, man, you gotta just point the other guy out and say he works for Fat Cat. That's all you gotta do. And so the guy, who's clearly dumb, he's convinced he's just gotta walk in and say, yeah, that's him, and then walk out. So then when he does that, Sipowicz is with that other guy, and he says, hey, man, does it look like he just gave you up? Because if that, you want to start thinking about flipping, or you want to start thinking about being husband to a guy named Joe. He's like, I'll talk to anybody. He's like, well, I'm a wonderful listener. And then as the case is wrapping up, Cohen brings up to Fancy that the 2-7, where the guy left the drug note, never had any report about the drug note.
Yeah.
So it seems like someone may have just picked up the drugs. So they have to go, Sipowicz and Simone are in the bathroom, and they realize they have to go back at Jerome, because if he was honest about this drug note, then there are some corrupt cops that probably just stole some cocaine.
Yeah.
Sipowicz makes a comment, is like, well, everything with Fancy is racial, and then Fancy walks in. So then Sipowicz explains, hey, we gotta go back at Jerome and be positive that he did this, or they're going to turn the 2-7 upside down, and I want all our ducks in a row.
Yeah, it's funny. This isn't the first time I feel like Sipowicz has been like, this is racial, or Fancy's always thought racial. I feel like Sipowicz is like projecting his racial tendencies onto Fancy. You get what I'm saying?
Well, it's because they did have that barbecue scene in the earlier seasons, but it's...
Yeah.
Fancy, because you said earlier, like, Fancy holds the black cops to a higher standard, probably because he holds himself to a higher standard, and he also takes the road that is the best road, even if it's, like, detrimental, or not exactly what he wants. When Sipowicz is like, oh, he makes everything a racial thing, it's because Sipowicz lives in a world where you can just say whatever you want about minorities. Fancy will be the first one that's like, hey, you gotta check that shit, because we gotta make sure our work gets done here, and that's not gonna help anybody. So then he's like, whoa, what is it about a racial thing? I'm just letting you know what happened while using racist language. And also, Sipowicz, he always seems to have this underlying thought that they're out to get him because he's white and they're black. So yeah, it's Fancy does it make everything a race thing when dealing with Sipowicz. It seems like that's how, like, Sipowicz is like, everything's a race thing with him. He's like, yeah, because you take it there and he has to respond.
Well, the thing is like, it always feels like Andy's always taking it there.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And so, like, that's why it's funny that he is always like, well, Fancy always has to make it racial. And it's like, well, no, he's just reacting to you, dickhead. Like, you're the one that's always racial.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. They go to interrogate Jerome because they need to be positive that Jerome actually left that note and that somebody at the police station is corrupt or stole the drugs or whatnot. And I love this interrogation, too, because they basically say, well, where did you leave this note? And he's like, oh, I left it at the desk. He's like, was anybody there? He's like, no. And he's like, there's always somebody at the desk. And they're going hard on him because they want to be sure. And he's like, no, there's a bunch of flyers and stuff on it. And like, oh, it's the community relations desk. So then they say, well, we got a tip that you and Quasi were involved in this drug deal. Is that true? And the guy, he kind of lets his fear drop down to be like, Quasi was there to help me. So I don't know what you're implying about me, but don't say that about him, because he didn't do anything wrong. And it's pretty clear that this guy's story is legit.
Yeah.
So they have to tell Cohen, and Cohen is like, because Cohen's a dick. Everybody hates Cohen. They tell him the drug part is true, but that stays out of our department. We have nothing to do with that. Like, they don't want to be investigating other cops. It's going to be IAB who takes care of it.
Yeah.
And Cohen makes a comment that makes Sipowicz say he's looking to piggyback one case on the other to get a bigger splash for his boss, the greasy little twerp.
It's so funny, like, Andy just worried about doing his job instead of, like, race and how angry he gets at the fucking attorneys and shit. This case would be solved so fast.
Then Cohen responds with, how did I get to be the bad guy? And Sipowicz just says, ask your parents.
Yeah. Sipowicz's best comebacks are with him, I think.
They give the information to the ex-wife again, I guess. They only do this in person and not over the phone so they could have this intense scene where Sipowicz tries to press an apology.
Yeah.
Because everybody is saying, like, oh, we just wanted to let you know that your father did die a hero. He was doing the right thing. And
doesn't he apologize to the little... Yeah, he's apologizing to the little girl more than anything.
And he apologizes twice where he says, like, I wanted to apologize about the things I said to your dad. And then her mom cuts him off. And he's like, yeah, that's great, whatever. And then he's like, look, I wanted to apologize because I've not always been nice to him and I've said some terrible things. And then her mother says, remember, that's the man that called your father the N-word.
Yeah.
And he's like, you don't have to tell her that. She doesn't. She's like, you know that the circumstances were different, but you don't have to tell that to her. And he's like, I apologize for using that kind of language. And the little girl says, okay, and gives him a handshake.
Like, the girl forgives Andy before anyone, the grown-ups do.
Exactly.
But then I think that's like a representation of how they always say, you know, hate or, like, bigotry is something you learn. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, all these old people hate each other and are mad and, like, have a lot of racist thoughts towards each other, where she's just like, I lost my dad, and you're being nice to me type of thing. I don't know.
It's also kind of a situation, it seems, where she, the little girl, she was only told, okay, this man used the N-word with my dad. My parents, that's all I know about this man. But this man also came to help me out when I was on the porch, and then he didn't tell me that my dad had died because he thought my mother would be a better person to tell me, and he figured out who killed my father, and he's standing in front of me right now and he's apologizing, and my mom is not giving him a second to apologize. He seems really sad and sorry about it, and I was always told by my parents to forgive people, so I'm gonna forgive him. Yeah, it's like what you said, like, kids don't see bigotry, they're, like, taught bigotry over time.
Well, the other thing is like, I mean, I don't blame her mom, but, like, none of these adults are making it easy on her.
No, not at all.
You know what I mean? Like, she lost her dad, she's going through all of this, and they're bringing in all this racial tension, all this hatred, and they're, like, putting it on her. Like, the mom is like, don't you forget, this is a man that just called your dad, who you just found out was dead, the N-word. And she's like, what? I didn't know this. Like, I'm just trying to deal with the death of my father. And her mom's like, don't forget it. Don't you forget this shit. And then you got Andy being like, your dad was an asshole. And it's like, and then he's like, well, I'm sorry I called your dad the N-word, even though I hated him. It's like, it's just like she has a lot to go through, and it's also a little unfair. And, like, I don't think any of the parents or the
adults
in the situation are recognizing that maybe this isn't the best time to have her deal with this. Like, maybe you should, like, console her and, like, be with her because she just lost her father, you know?
It's also, it felt like the show is, at that moment, because we're not even into the last scene, which is very important, I think. But at this moment, it seemed like the show is forgiving Sipowicz for being who he is. Because they provide him a situation where he gets to atone for what he did to Quasi through apologizing to his daughter. And then he gets a handshake from her, symbolizing the acceptance of his apology. Because, like, we had the same discussion about that episode, where he does use the N-word, he uses it reflexively as a parrot to what Quasi says. And when the mother's like, remember, this is the man who used the N-word towards your father. And he says, now, don't tell her that, because you know the circumstances, and she doesn't. He doesn't know what Quasi told her mother, but he's hoping that what he told him was, I was saying some shit in the hospital about how I am the only N-word, and then he responded with, no, you're the N-word, that blah, blah, blah. Which is not the same as him showing up to the hospital and being like, yo, N-word,
Andy doesn't say, because I don't, if I remember correctly, I don't think Andy calls him the N-word.
Yeah, he does. He 100%.
He does? I thought he, okay, I forgot exactly the sentence.
The guy says, I'm the only N-word you know you can't mess with. And he says, like, no, I think you're the N-word that is impending an impeding an investigation and making my job harder. He doesn't.
Okay, you're right, never mind.
He doesn't come out and go like, yeah, you're an N-word, and you're a this, and like, go on a...
It's like if Quasi would have said, I'm the only Jesus freak who's out here, blah, 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 and then Sipowicz is like, you're the only Jesus freak who's screwing me over.
Yeah, basically.
He's basically just, got you, I remember now.
That's why I think they have that point where Sipowicz says, look, you know the context, she won't know the context. But the scene after that, after he gets
that's where,
the handshake.
That's where it's like, I feel like the mom is somewhat at fault here, because you can't just be like, he said the N-word without the context, because now you're lying to your child about exactly what happened just to help her be on your side.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I mean? Like, you can't do that.
Sipowicz gets the handshake, and the next scene, he's sitting in the bathroom, in the locker room. Simone comes in. And then Sipowicz kind of has what I would call a racist pity party, where he's saying, can you believe that woman was telling that girl to hate me?
Yeah.
Which, that on the surface, I'm like, okay, that's pretty messed up. Yeah, I agree. You did mess up things, but she basically looked at her child and said, hate this man. I agree with you. But then he starts going into, I went to Vietnam. And you're like, all right. He's like, I come back from Vietnam and I get on the job. Okay. And then they put me in undercover with, like, this maid service that works for the Black Panthers. I didn't understand it. And then he's like, so I have to applaud these guys that hate the government that I fought for. And I was like, is that what Vietnam was about? I don't really think so.
Yeah.
And
If I remember correctly, I don't think that's what Vietnam was about, but...
You remember when Vietnam attacked America? Because I don't think we do. And he's like, so I went to defend this nation that I'm proud of, and now I'm telling these brothers, good job, man, great job blowing up that bank where my mother pays on her house, and they took out my dad's eye after they wouldn't let him read the meter. basically, he's like, I had to come back and hear, these are his words, hear this, my country being insulted by a bunch of spades.
Yeah.
And then Simone goes, don't talk like that. And he's like, why? What's the problem? And he says, because when you use that language, I can't hear what you're saying. I only hear the language, I don't hear what you're saying. Which is an important point, I think, in today's culture. When you use that language and you say those things, we don't hear your actual complaints and your problems. We just hear, you're a racist.
Yeah, and then people get mad about it because you're not listening to them.
And what Sipowicz's point is like, you don't know what it's like to be hurt by a specific group of people, and then when you lash out at that specific group of people, everybody hates you, is basically what he's saying. And
yeah, it's really, yeah.
And then Simone says, yeah, and my dad was beat up by white longshoremen because he was too dark. And I don't hate all white people, and I don't hate you. And then he's like, when you use that language, are you thinking about that little girl? And he says, no, I wasn't talking about her. He's like, yeah, well, that's what I see when you say it. And it was a learning moment for Sipowicz, but it also made it seem like he hasn't really learned anything. Because he's basically like, I can't believe that they'd be taught to hate me. But also, I hate all of those people because they did this to me.
It's
I think it's kind of like a catharsis moment. Is that the right word? It's a moment where he really has to look at himself, but he's not learning the things you should learn from the situation. He's like, oh, wow, I can't believe they would tell that girl to hate me. But man, do I have a problem with those black people. And it's like, how do you say those?
Because of Vietnam.
Because I came back from Vietnam, and you know what? They still didn't like me for some reason. And it's weird. It's and the way Simone was like trying to help him realize it, but also keeping his cool in some ways, and in some ways not keeping his cool. It was a very good scene, but it was also very... I feel like we could do a whole nother episode, which I think I'm going to do with Pompa Asher, who's Sipowicz's biggest apologist. Also, with how, like, this episode moves, it was really weird to end it on such a, like, heavy note.
You shouldn't leave it that, like... I'd always feel like you should never really... Well, I mean, this is a different generation of TV, but I kind of feel like... You should never leave a TV show with a tough ending like that. I mean, I know it gives you, like, it sets you up for next year, but...
It just ends basically with Sipowicz saying, at least she shook my hand, which was kind of like... I'm not 100% sure what it's supposed to... If it's supposed to symbolize, like, the youth are willing to work with you if you're racist. I don't know. we're willing to listen to you, but we're also going to call out your bullshit.
That's an interesting way to put it, I guess.
Simone's point was like, look, bad things happen to everybody. You can't blame it on a race. You just have to roll with the punches. And it was, it was a cool point from him and an interesting point from Sipowicz.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to say about this episode before it ends, Kyle?
No, it's like, it's an awkward episode to watch, and it's kind of like, makes you feel uneasy kind of watching it, but it's good.
Yeah, it's a good episode. It's a good, good NYPD Blue episode. Every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AsherBrosPodcast.com, iTunes, Stitcher, where you find a podcast. We're on Twitter at AsherBrosPod, Instagram AsherBrothersPodcast. Right now the schedule's every other Tuesday, but you know, life finds a way, things happen, so schedules change. And have a good one. Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you have a moment, please rate and review the show wherever you're listening to it so that more people can listen to it. And then maybe, just maybe, we'll have more people talking about the show than ever before, which it deserves. It's a great show. If you need more NYPD Blue info in your life, you can always check out True Blue, a book written about the first couple seasons by a creator and a consultant and probably a ghostwriter.
You could also check out Gene Kendall's book, An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue, where he's going through the entire show, kind of like we are, but in book form, and it's only 99 cents on Amazon, so that's a pretty good deal. If you need the show itself, it is on Hulu, and it is on Amazon currently, so you could watch every single episode of The Best Show Ever on those streaming services, and then you can watch other stuff, because they got tons of cool stuff on both of those services. For those that want to know our recording schedule, we're already recorded up to Season 4, Episode 7, and I will try my best to post when we're starting on Episode 8. Anyway, have a good one, watch more NYPD Blue, and peace!